And we are live. This is Dark Journalists. What a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room already. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, it looks like celebrate good times. Come on.
Right on.
This was a remarkable day, of course, with the endorsement of President Trump by RFK Jr. and then joining him on stage after suspending his own campaign in a very dramatic press conference. And then joining him on stage in Arizona. Of course, the two were there. And the special guest that Trump said was going to be on stage with him turned out to be Bobby Kennedy Jr. In an electrifying moment, they got together. And they got together to save America. Those two putting their heads together and joining forces is everything that the deep state is afraid of. And this was a remarkable political earthquake. Of course, I've been predicting it, but also you always cautiously predict it because of the number of factors that are going on there. And I'm not one of those people who go out and say, I was right. What I want to do is emphasize how important this is and how much we need to get behind this and roil, and I mean roil, the Harris-Waltz ticket, which is incredibly dangerous, incredibly destructive ticket as they displayed all week at the DNC, an absolute disaster for America should Harris get in. Of course, Harris didn't receive any votes to become the nominee. They just took out Stepford Biden. And I think there was some inkling that they could kind of get Stepford Biden past November 5th and then sort of move him out of the way in the interim period and install Harris. Didn't work out that way. There was some faction in there that wanted Biden out because the election wasn't going to hold. And so all of the lawfare that they employed against President Trump. And I have to say the lawfare is something that's on my mind a lot as I watch this, because it's kind of the main ticket that they have left in their arsenal. So tonight we're going to get into that and get into what we're talking about with recapturing Camelot, which is what President Trump and RFK Jr. are all about right now. And it's JFK's new frontier versus the deep state. And I'll show how this has been a 60-year arc of this battle that's been put in place and how the battle lines are very clearly drawn and how under legal, normal circumstances at the ballot box and through the judiciary and all these other things, this move to make the country Marxist and to install this leader with no votes is the kind of thing that can be stopped. We have the tools to do it now, but it's a very thin window. And I believe in there are so many tools that are available to us that all the phony talk about, you know, civil war and things of this nature, I think that that's something that the establishment is kind of pushing, in fact. And there's so many tools that are and so many common interests that we have as Americans. And I think it is the fringe groups that are really pushing this. And when we get right to the heart of it, I'm going to point out the continuity of government, emergency power players. They are the ones who are working closely with the Democrats in this scenario to say, well, if Trump's looking good for November 5th, we need to have something else up our sleeve. And I think it's a matter of fact that we're going to engage with these people. I don't think that they're going to let it go as a fair and square election, because if they do, they're going to lose and lose badly. We'll get into all that tonight. I want to remind everyone that we're going to take your questions. We're going to do about a 90-minute special report here tonight. And in the second half of that, we're going to take your questions. And Miss Olivia will take those as we speak. I also want to remind you, if you're new here, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter, but it keeps us in touch. We've been experiencing some truly remarkable censorship, as you can imagine, with all this. Now, a couple of quick things right off the bat. One of those pictures, of course, I watched when Bobby went on stage with Trump in Arizona. And interesting that it's Arizona. There's a border state that's experiencing this incredible wave of a broken border and an invasion of our southern border, southwestern border. And so I think it's very significant that it happened to be there, that this took place. There were rumors that Bobby was going to call it quits in Boston or in LA. And then that it turned out to be Arizona and they did the event together is remarkable. I think they've been working behind the scenes to put this together, but I think it was a hard thing for Bobby and his crowd to figure out how to navigate. But the DNC had done so many crimes against his campaign that at a certain point, I think it became something inevitable that was going to happen. Bobby Kennedy, I think, gave the greatest speech of his career today, and he let us know exactly what was going on with the corruption in the media, the corruption in the DNC, and really trying to say how we could forge a very different kind of America, and throwing his votes and his endorsement to President Trump, which is remarkable if you think about the arc of President Kennedy getting into office. And we'll touch on this tonight. There's an incredible arc there because, of course, he was the big upset candidate in 1960 when the establishment candidate, Richard Nixon, had rigged everything to get in. And the establishment thought they had a lock, but they didn't realize the long arm of the Kennedys, who were kind of, you know, if you think about the money compared to in 1960 dollars versus 2024, we're talking about they were the billionaires of their time. So a lot of economic and political levers that, you know, Joseph Kennedy had been putting in place for a long time, because, of course, he had looked at being president himself as far back as 1940. And those political alliances he formed, make no mistake, came to fruition some 20, 25 years later with his son. But it's also interesting of the things that were going on in the background. And I think also the deep state themselves were surprised by the kind of idealism and independence that JFK showed. And I think he scared them to death, actually, when you come right down to it. And they had hatched a plan as early as the election period to remove him, but they didn't come to that full decision until the last year of his presidency, 1963. Now, when we look at the arc for Bobby, it's very interesting, because when he got into this race, it was last April. Of course, I was there at the event in Boston. It was a remarkable thing, and you could feel the spirit and the weight of him as a candidate. As I said, fantastic ideas that Bobby was able to articulate, and he as a candidate, I thought, was tremendous. When the DNC kept him out of the race with Biden and he had to go independent, the campaign had some twists and turns that didn't show him in the best light. And I think as soon as he got back into this stage of going against the Democrats and calling them out and calling the media out, we got a remarkable transformation out of Bobby. And here we are with Bobby now being talked about as a major for a major position in Trump's campaign. This is a political earthquake, and Bobby and Trump together is what the deep state fears the most. Make no mistake about it. And they're going for it. If you heard the rhetoric that was going on at this fantastic event, and I have to say it was an incredible thing to see them together and rocking it together, because they both are such heavy hitters from different places, but both with a lot of integrity. And I have to say that one of the things that Trump mentioned immediately is that he was going to have Bobby do a commission on presidential assassinations, and he was going to release all of the records of the JFK assassination. Now, this must have been an earthquake far beyond the roar of the crowd there. The deep state must just be looking at this and saying, we thought we had a problem before, but with them fully united and with them after the JFK records, this is a real big problem, because as I've posited over the years, the JFK records and their impact, they've been kept secret for a reason. And as we've learned, and, you know, I listened to this one little conversation about a year and a half ago. It was Judge Napolitano kind of musing on a very small channel. It had like 250, 300 subscribers. And I just happened to be listening to it one day from some guy in Atlanta. And Napolitano was talking about a conversation he had with President Trump at the end of his presidency. And he was saying, well, release the Kennedy records. And Trump was saying, I can't do it. Napolitano was saying, what do you mean you can't do it? And he said, no, really, nobody could do it. Like, you don't realize what's in there. And Napolitano was like, well, don't treat people like children. You know, if you said you were going to do it, let it out. And Trump said, Andrew, if you knew it was in there, you wouldn't release it either. Now, I made that little conversation very popular to the point where it became the talking point of every news outlet on the independent side And, you know, you heard RFK Jr. bringing it up, and Rogan and other things. Rogan did a terrible thing by putting Elizondo on his show today, by the way. I'm going to talk about that too, along with some choice pictures of Elizondo with Clapper. So watch out. But that conversation was crucial because Judge Napolitano, who has a very libertarian bent to him, but is a well-known figure, for him to relay this conversation, which was a private conversation, but it let you know that whatever was going on with Trump and the original release date, which was set for October 26, 2017, when the CIA blocked the release of those records mandated by law to come out according to the JFK Records Act, set up in 1992 in response to the Oliver Stone movie. And that was all based on the Garrison case. And so it's fascinating. If you think about the ripples and how this stuff works, the Garrison case was set in motion in 1967. And of course, they came up with a non-guilty verdict for Clay Shaw in 1969. But think of the ripple of time there. So the case ends in 1969. And in Christmas time, 1991, Oliver Stone debuts the movie based on Garrison's account of the trial. So that's, you know, a good 20, 30 years there that take place. And it's interesting because then we have another ripple after the fact, which is the 2017, the 2017 date of October. So we have this kind of wild move through time and place. And what I'm going to tell you about those records is, and one of the reasons I've deduced that there is something very, very powerful in those records, is that Bobby Kennedy insisted on a meeting at a Virginia farm immediately after the assassination with the director of the CIA and John McCone. And he took him aside. And when they asked later, some of his aides asked what took place, it was close aides. He said, "I asked him certain things in a way that he could not lie to me." Now, I think that what that means in the grand scheme of things is that he set up some sort of booby trap so that if they were to remove from their records what they had done, it would set off all these alarm bells in the Justice Department, the State Department, and everywhere else. So there's been something sitting there. And every time these groups hear about it, you know, when they heard about it in the 70s with the Church Committee, when they heard about it in the 90s with the ARRB and still the Kennedy wave, you know, you can still feel the nervousness that goes on that level. It's because there's something in those records. So that declaration with Bobby and Trump saying, we're going to release the records as soon as he gets back in the White House, you know, there's no stopping that. And so this is a different ballgame, and this is the reclaiming of Camelot on so many levels. And you might say, well, you know, the Kennedy case, if you're talking about 60 years ago, the roots of the corruption that have ruled the roost and how you got this unelected candidate of Kamala Harris and the whole kind of staged phony Oprah, Clinton, Obama thing, you know. And I have to say, a lot of people go after other people's looks and all that stuff. There was something decidedly unhealthy about these people. They just seemed to be drained of any of the inspiration or the glamour that they originally had. And I think part of that is that they've been living behind the fence of their own insanity, in a sense. And nobody in their circles have had the guts to tell them you've gone off the deep end and you're living in this weird fantasy that you're going to bring this cultural Marxism mixed with fascism to America and just make America into some economic zone with Jeff Bezos and, you know, Klaus Schwab sitting at the top. I mean, you know, it's been an insane roll of things. And part of that was the Stepford Biden attacks and legal warfare against his political enemy. This is totally different. When they raided Mar-a-Lago, we went into a different situation. Of course, the 2020 election, the COVID op, all of these things, you can feel the hands of the continuity of government group operational. So we have been in kind of a different reality and people have sensed it. Hey, what's going on? You know, now it's interesting. I'll give you a very small example. There's a town in central Massachusetts here, which there's a big controversy going on with it today where they found an outbreak of EEE. Okay. And this is this virus that these mosquitoes bring. So they called a huge curfew for activities. You know, you couldn't go out after 6 p.m. and all this stuff. And they're just at the ready with these. I'd like to see how many different towns are experiencing this. But they are at the ready with something and using test models. They're ready to unload that kind of COVID op, cyber outage, welcome to the blackout, whatever it happens to be. And I think this EEE thing was kind of a test balloon in that area. But what's fascinating is the instant ability of the emergency powers to suspend the Constitution and to restrict these people's rights. You know, oh, you can't walk in the park because of EEE. They had one case. And this, remember, we had this incredible thing with Bill Gates and his experiment of dropping off all these mosquitoes all over the place. Well, you could get EEE all over the place in that case. Maybe Bill Gates just included that. You know, have we checked the records of what he included in those mosquitoes? So we need to look at these things from a perspective that they need an excuse to activate emergency powers. And I've put on the record that at times you could say, you know, it moves kind of the balance of odds, moves somewhere nuclear, it moves cyber attack, and then the UFO threat. And the UFO threat, it's interesting because the UFO file aspect is very active in this election, even in the clash of the vision of Trump and Kennedy on that stage. I could see the UFO file coming to a much higher place immediately because of the knowledge of the both of them and the family legacies of the both of them. But then in the state that they're in, people haven't put two and two together on this, but Ruben Gallego is a big time. He latched onto the whole Christopher Mellon, UAP, NDAA, UFO threat nonsense. And, you know, Trump was supporting Carrie Lake, who was the woman who tried for governor there and had some issues. She was a newscaster. She's a popular speaker. She hasn't had much luck on the election front, but Arizona's been very, you know, they've had a lot of weird issues around voting, shall we say, including the fact that for the first time since the 80s, supposedly they voted for Biden, which was hard to believe. But let's just look at Gallego to get a snapshot, and then we'll go back to this larger picture here. Gallego, who's running for senator in Arizona, he's currently the congressman, but he's beating Carrie Lake by about 10 points, and he has the whole establishment thing behind him. But I did a lot of research on him because he was pushing this whole false UFO threat thing with Marco Rubio. He's a Democrat, and Rubio's a Republican, so that instantly caught my eye. But this is Gallego, total lack of focus, lawmaker on a mission to compel the Pentagon to take UFOs seriously. There's been a growing number of reports in recent years from Navy pilots and other military personnel of highly advanced craft of unknown origin violating protected airspace. And Ruben Gallego wants to do something about it, baby. Well, this guy they're trying to install into the Senate. When I went into his background, I found a totally different person because he was over here at Harvard in 2003. He actually had a different name, a very different look. And he was an expert in psychological crowd operations. And then they sent him over to these various war theaters in the Middle East. And it's this very strange little thing to have in his background. He was also previously married to the mayor of Phoenix. And we know we had the whole Phoenix Lights thing. So there's a big UFO underbelly. Whenever you get around what's going on in the 2024 election, it's there and it's you can't miss it. And it's so important and so crucial in all this to understand where this is happening. Now let's go back to the politics of this for a moment. Earlier in the year, as we know, an unprecedented case brought by the corrupt prosecutor, DA Alvin Bragg, against President Trump about a weird thing from 15 years ago with Stormy Daniels and, you know, some nonsense. And they packaged this weird case that every legal person who's looked at it says it's neither a federal case nor a local case. It's some kind of mild misdemeanor, record keeping. Like, what are you doing? But they got this in the kangaroo section of New York and they made it happen. Now they have this conviction and President Trump is supposed to be sentenced on September 18th. One of the last things that they have in there. They've tried to assassinate Trump, of course, and we're going to get into Thomas Crooks tonight a little bit further with more info that's coming out about him and his various doppelgangers and the person who died there on the roof attempting to assassinate the president. You know, the various things that have taken place here with the legal warfare. So they have this Judge Mershon. He has the ability here to send Trump to prison. Now, every legal expert has said nobody in their right mind would ever do this, that set off all these things, and also that Trump can appeal the case instantly and all these other things. And yet, there's enough room for the kind of kangaroo court activity that they could seek to, you know, say, disrupt Trump campaigning for the next 6 weeks, try to jail him, make him look bad. And all these things are still active. We're still in the middle of it. So every time you think you've gotten ahead of it, well, we're past the assassination, we're past this, we're past that, you know, Biden collapses out and they install Harris. There's always some weird thing going on here because they are still going through the multiple options they have to stay in power, and they need to stay in power because they want to push this Ukraine war. They want the global government, and this is where they're headed. So we're in a very dangerous place because under normal circumstances, what we're looking at is an incredibly unpopular administration on its way out, and Trump, you know, with a huge lead in the polls that they've been, you know, they've been saying, oh, well, Kamala came in and, you know, all these polls are evening out. Look, go over the history of it. A classic history is Walter Mondale. Walter Mondale is the biggest loser in all of presidential history. After a debate where they said, oh, Reagan seems like he's old, they had 50-50 polls in all of the major polling. If you go back and look at that from 1984, I did, and I looked at all the various commentary after the fact. This is always kind of a thing that plays out, as it were, and especially with the Democrats in charge here on the polling front. And Mondale ended up losing in the biggest blowout in history. And the only state he was able to hold on to was Minnesota, which is his home state. And there were some questions about whether he won there. But so Reagan completely obliterated him. But this is the nature of how they can spin polls when somebody just gets installed there. Kamala Harris, according to every leading political expert who's honest, is a disaster of a candidate. Terrible background in California, one of the worst records. And a terrible background as the borders are in America, obviously not doing anything, and now announcing that she's going to do all these policies because of the terrible things that have happened over the past 4 years. Well, you've been the one in charge. Hello. So she selects an incredibly, incredibly extremist governor in Minnesota, a psychopath named Tim Walz. And Walz is interesting. People in Minnesota know him, and they've been emailing me and being like, you know, please get this across to people. This guy is a complete, ultimate radical. And you know, some of the things on the record about him: Tim Walz administration spearheaded efforts to cut most age requirements for genital surgeries on kids. This is where these are the people that we're getting. So you understand how important it is to defeat this ticket. Now, I'm going to bring up something here which doesn't go down easy, and it's a little disruptive, but there is something active and that I think is being activated around independent media, which is trying to suggest, one, oh, the political, you know, the presidential race doesn't matter. One, two, oh, you know, the presence of J.D. Vance, you know, oh, it, you know, you can't vote for Trump. And also, you can't vote for Kennedy because he's into Bitcoin, or his position on Gaza isn't correct, whatever it happens to be. Look, you've got Trump, all right? Trump is, what is he going to do? He's going to seal the border, one. That's a fact. Trump, when he was in office, this was almost his sole effort in the country as far as domestic policy was concerned. He will stop the invasion of the southern border. You know, it doesn't mean that Trump is perfect, but when it comes to these fundamental issues around the Constitution and what makes a country, Trump certainly is a 10 billion times better choice than Kamala Harris. So this thing that's been coming out of the independent media needs to be examined because it's wrong. That's the first problem. It's totally wrong. And the second part is it seems to just repetitively go after Trump using something like Vance or some other weird background person to connect to Trump. And that's all they do. They don't go after Harris. when Bobby came up, they went after him too, but they don't go after Harris. They leave Harris hanging out there. They didn't go after Biden. So, you know, there's a weird wing that goes on there. And, you know, I like and try to get along with so many people in the independent media. But I mean, a lot of this comes from the Whitney Webb wing of things. And it's a very imbalanced vibe. And, you know, I've had Whitney on the show. I like her and I like her research. But injecting that into this election is wrong. It's a totally wrong approach. Because it's good to know the backgrounds on everybody, yes, but equally. And you can't just say, oh, I'm against all parties, or presidents don't matter, or just, you know, don't worry, write in Mickey Mouse or something like that. Look, there are 20 million illegal immigrants that have come in under the Biden administration. All those people now are getting set up with housing. They're getting set up with social services. They will collapse the country under the weight of what the Biden administration has done. It does matter. And there is a huge difference between Trump, Kennedy, Vance, and this sick thing of Stepford Biden and Harris. Now, they collapsed Biden out of there. Now they're using Harris as the puppet with the extremist waltz. That's not a normal situation. That's not, hey, I can get to feel good because I'm making the perfect the enemy of the good, and therefore my record's clean because I don't vote for anybody or I don't get behind anything. And that way, nobody can ever say anything about me and my allegiances or whatever. That's a totally cowardly position, in my opinion. And it needs to be booted out and exposed around any independent circles, people who are saying this. First of all, the presidency is the most important office anywhere. Take it to the bank. And the presidency, at this point, at this juncture, is basically the leader of the world. So when we look at this, when somebody says, oh, the presidency doesn't matter, who's in there, they can't do anything anyway, that's actually an effort. It comes out of an ignorance or a disgust, which I can appreciate, with the political system, but it's wrong. It's incorrect because the presidency is the titular head of the political system. You have a body politic and the presidency is the head. So yes, the head functioning is absolutely crucial. And if they have the people on their side, then it makes an incredible difference for policy. So saying that you're never going to find something wrong, you know, with somebody like Trump, or, you know, there's always going to be some person in office that you're going to find issues with. The question is, do they respect the Constitution? What are the policies that were in place when they were in the presidency? And who are the people around them? So when we have Trump and Kennedy joining forces, are we going to look at this whole thing saying, well, you know, I don't like Bitcoin, so therefore no votes matter, go against Trump, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, those things can all be hassled out when you get right down to it. What can't be hassled out is the fact that this group that's in charge and that wants to steal the next election will completely demolish America by having it overrun by an army, an invading army, of people that we don't know anything about and that they aren't vetting, but they are putting tremendous resources in. Now, in this state, in Massachusetts, they've spent over $1 billion. The governor went on record about that and now is saying, we can't take anybody else, and trying to make sure they don't ship anyone else here. In New York, $3 billion, okay? They're bankrupting these different cities and towns. And then that will go instantly into Medicare. They'll sink that, and they'll sink the obligations that we have by importing this. Now, you have to think who's behind this and what would be the reason for it. That's going to get us into the most important conversation tonight as we cruise into this Reclaiming Camelot, JFK's New Frontier versus the Deep State with Bobby Kennedy Jr. and President Trump. Can we get there? I think we can. So we're going to get into that. We're going to take your questions. We'll go for about another hour here tonight before I go any further, Miss Olivia Europe.
I have to admit, I'm having a hard time focusing. I'm so dizzy. I said dizzy with delight. I'm on a high.
That's great.
Kate says, one of the best political speeches I've ever heard. That was amazing when Bobby walked out to Foo Fighters, My Hero. I have to say, that made me cry. I was bawling. Was just a historic and amazing moment when he came out. Lorcan23 says, I've only cried twice in the past 10 years when they shot Trump, and tonight when RFK Jr. walked out onto that rally stage.
Oh my God. Think about that. Well, shooting Trump, this whole thing was supposed to be you know, they were going to throw it up in the air and hope that they could get some kind of neocon on the Republican side, like a Nikki Haley or a Rubio in there. And it would be like, oh, you know, Trump died, but it was his own political, verbiage, and it was his own rhetoric that got him killed. And let's have a kinder, gentler thing. Hey, look, here's Kamala Harris. In fact, if you really go over the whole thing, you can see it's been a very steady effort. The first effort, as far back as Mar-a-Lago, to raid Mar-a-Lago was to try to engage. Remember, they were authorized with deadly force. This is the president of the United States that they're raiding. So they wanted his bodyguards to shoot back and get us into a whole violence thing. Then the frivolous cases. Then the awards of hundreds of millions of dollars to these anonymous people going in suing him. So it's been a very steady effort to get this guy. Now, let's go to the Bobby Kennedy campaign. Bobby came out and they threw all these ridiculous things at him about his late wife or his diary of conquests, or, you know, they came recently at the most absurd stuff, like, oh, he picked up a bear on the side of the road and then put him in Central Park. <It's> I mean, they would use anything. And the things that they've gone after him with have been, you know, trying to make sure that he doesn't get any standing or respect from the public, when in fact, he's one of the most intelligent figures in public life. Understands the, not to say he didn't have his personal challenges over the years, but he understands the issues better than anyone. And let's face it, the Kennedys are incredibly smart political family. Now, an interesting piece around the Camelot idea and aspect and how this is really reclaiming Camelot, which the deep state fears the most, but which we need the most. We have a rare opportunity here with the joining up of Trump and Kennedy. And why we need to get that pessimism I was just talking about out of the, especially out of independent research, that whole like, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, the presidents don't matter. And look, I found somebody connected to Peter Thiel. You know, you're going to find people connected to Peter Thiel no matter what you do. And it doesn't mean that that's not important, but it's not everything. You know, you're going to find there's a network in there of these interlocking corporations, billionaires, and you can choose them and select them, and whoever you amplify is going to show up. But when you go through that, if you see the people who've done the most damage, you're going to find the kind of Soros crowd is much more, if you look at them and where they are ideologically, they're much more committed to chaos, as it were. And when you look at people like Thiel, you're going to be able to expose their influence and the things that they've done without just saying, well, anybody who's ever done anything with this guy or that guy, he's out. These people are embedded in the political process that we have right now. So if you can write Mickey Mouse in for president, that's fine, but that doesn't do anything to change the situation. And if you want to stop the border from being flooded with people that are likely terrorists and are being set up to destroy America, well, then you can go on in your little fantasy, and it's a kind of purist snobbery that says, well, you know, nobody's good enough. Somebody's connected to some bad connection. So therefore, I can't support any of these people. And how dare, you know, Bobby Kennedy support Trump and all this stuff? Well, these are the same people who spend all their bullets shooting, pardon the pun, at Kennedy's presidency and his campaign. So, you know, they were going after him and they go after Trump, but they seem to leave the Democrats alone. This is what bothers me the most. And I think that that has to be, you know, instead of just having it roll kind of nonstop through the independent media, I'm calling it out right now. There's something wrong with this, and we need to get our heads on straight about saving the Constitution and saving America. Now, people can choose whoever they want to vote for in relation to that, but we can't have this nonstop patter of like, oh, this person's disqualified because they're associated with this person, unless you're going to apply it to both sides. In that case, people have to make the best of the choices that we have. The fact that President Trump has a track record and the fact that Bobby Kennedy is now joining with Trump is a huge earthquake, political earthquake. And I think it can save the country, in fact. But we have to be wise enough to take it and not be sitting in this thing where I said the perfect becomes the enemy of the good. That's the most dangerous position, and it's highly immature. It's, you know, it reminds me of this thing where, you know, imagine that, say, an actor gets the ultimate chance to, you know, show up and read for a part that he really wants, but he always dreamed of getting there in a limo, you know, and well, the only thing available is, you know, a Toyota Corolla Lyft that's going to get him there. And he's like, well, I've always dreamed of getting there in a limo. So, you know, that's how I'm going to do it. And so he misses the audition and that he doesn't get the part. You know, this is how it is. The perfect can't be the enemy of the good. This is important because in this world, you're not going to find anybody who's perfect. You will not. And on a political level, you just strive for the best thing that you can get. And if you have people who respect the Constitution, you know, and where there's a chance that especially the first two, you know, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, what you have in the Democratic Party now is so anti-American, but it's also totalitarian. And they want to take all those things away. They want censorship to be the rule of the day. They want to prosecute their political enemies. Where will this end? You know, how long until they put people in camps? Literally. I mean, it won't take that much longer. Look at in COVID, they were already getting funding to do it. So that's not scaremongering. That's what their plan is. They are a depopulation camp. And there are numbers of corrupt Republicans who would join with them in that effort, for sure. But there is a coalition of Republicans, libertarians, and a sliver of kind of middle America Democrats that will save the country and reverse all this. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We are talking about recapturing Camelot, JFK's New Frontier versus the Deep State tonight with you, going deep on the new partnership and endorsement of RFK Jr. of President Trump and his candidacy. RFK Jr. knows it inside and out from one of the most powerful political dynasties in history. And he's seen the treachery there at the DNC, and he is throwing the full weight of his endorsement behind President Trump. And for good reason, President Trump is a warrior who they tried to assassinate in this process. And I think it's very important for us, with only 2 months left, to really get this right, because the mainstream media is just trying to push and roll this unelected candidate who didn't get any votes and force her down the throats of everybody, using the, you know, hope, the old blasé nonsense Obama deal. But again, Obama was just a clerk for the bankers. But, you know, at least Obama had talent as a politician. You know, Kamala has nothing. She really doesn't. She doesn't bring anything to the table. I'm even shocked that she got into law school. This is not does not seem like a very, you know, and we know she failed the bar the first time out. Some people do, but
I think most people do statistically.
That's not so much it. You know, it's just the way that they've portrayed her. It's very interesting to me. They installed her in the wrong position. It was way over her head to start with. And she was selected for certain, you know, the fact that she was a woman of color and that she was female, that was something that played very heavily there. But she did not have the ability, even politically, to play this off. She got out of the race immediately in 2020 because she didn't get any votes. And then in this process, she only got in because they bullied Stepford Biden in his mentally compromised condition to give up the presidency, because it was obvious to everyone. But they knew for years that Biden was like this. So it should have come as no surprise at all. Now, I want to read something to make us understand Camelot a little bit, and it's from Jacqueline Kennedy. And let's think about Camelot here and start to understand it as a political phenomenon for us, and how it can really set the stage for what happens, at least for the rest of the decade, for America and for the world. This is Jackie now. When quoted, she says, when Jack quoted something, it was usually classical, but I'm ashamed of myself. All I keep thinking of is this line from a musical comedy. At night, before we go to sleep, Jack liked to play some records, and the song he loved the most came at the very end of this record. The lines he loved to hear were, "Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment that was known as Camelot." Now, this is very interesting, because this, the whole Arthurian imagery around the Kennedy presidency. And I think that there's something kind of almost supernatural going on in the background with this. And it has to do with the dedication of Bobby Kennedy and the outstretched hand across these two very deep party line and the chasm there between the right and the left. And here is Bobby and Trump feeling that. And Trump, what they both understand about each other is that they both want America back and that they want to make it a great country again. And they both know Bobby from his incredible political past and Trump from being president, being a big success in the 80s and 90s and all the rest. But the other thing that's crucial to understand and remember about these two is that when we look at Trump, we know through Roy Cohn and these other figures that Trump knows everything about the deep state. And this is part of the problem that they have with him. On Bobby's side, you know, his dad was an incredible champion of justice, but he knew the underbelly. The Kennedys understood how the world worked as well. And they both understood the exotic technology, and Trump through his uncle and Bobby through his family. Those things are crucial. They can't be brought up in normal political discourse. I'm bringing them up here because this is the X series and you're the ideas room and you understand what I'm talking about. They are crucial factors in what we're talking about. The presence of these two working on the same side to open up the JFK assassination records, to bring forward, to lock the border up and to bring forward transparency, to get rid of the lawfare and get rid of these incredible, and I mean incredible, insane censorship. It was funny because a lot of that wing I've been talking about on the independent side, they're, you know, they've tried to label Trump as, oh, you know, he locked things down during COVID. I'm going to show you a lot of things in relation to 2020. One, Trump was not in favor of locking down. And it came up over and over again that Democrat governors would lock down their states and cities. And he would say, you shouldn't do that. We should open things up, or it should be for a limited time. And he kept trying to do things like keeping, you know, major athletic events going on, his own rallies, all kinds of things. He was not into this. I have all these mainstream media articles attacking Trump for promoting hydroxychloroquine, attacking Trump for, you know, for going and promoting these various therapies that were not vaccines because they didn't have one yet, remember. They didn't have the vaccine during Trump's entire presidency. Remember that. So none of the whole thing about mandates, all that stuff, that all came later with Biden. The vaccine was developed during the last year of the Trump presidency because when COVID came along, this is how it was rolled out. And any president who was in that spot at the time, you know, they probably would have been impeached if they didn't come up with something for it. The problem was the people who were in charge of that process corrupted it. And that's where the crime lies. So that needs to be kept in mind. I can show you article after article of them giving Trump such an incredibly hard time in relation to this because he was suggesting other things. Now, the problem with the fact that Trump was recommending things like hydroxychloroquine and these other therapies and bringing that forward is the emergency authorization rule is what was used to develop the vaccine. If they had something else that was widespread that people could use, like Trump promoted ivermectin, which was incredibly effective, and all these brave doctors came forward and lost their licenses in some cases, and we still have a lot of those guys out there who really battled for this truth, McCullough and some of these other ones. You know, this is very important because ivermectin was something that Trump promoted and they made vicious fun of Trump for doing this. So Trump was there and he was trying to move this into a different situation. The Democrat governors locked down their states. There's no federal edict from Trump where he bangs a gavel and says, lock down your states. It does not happen. He talks with them and tries to provide them with the resources that they need. That's the function of a president in a situation like that. The issue is the people who developed the COVID weapon, which came out of a lab in China that was run by Fauci. We know that now. The gain of function on it, that's where the prosecution should go to Fauci, and they should bring forward that entire wave of prosecution. That's something when you get Bobby Kennedy into office under a Trump administration that you can get. So I think people just bellyaching in order to have a problem, you know, with one ticket or another, I think that they're picking and choosing things and not seeing the big picture on this. So they're distorting history a little bit and saying, well, you know, I'm just going to say that Trump was a big vaccine promoter. Well, the people who were around Trump, like Fauci and all the rest of it, they were the people who developed the vaccine under this program. So technically, it was up to them to make sure it was safe. And the fact that Trump was involved in that process and that they loaded COVID onto Trump's presidency to get him out, in fact, and possibly to use the continuity of government forces to do it, you have to look at the real picture if you're going to look at this at all. Because if you think about Trump in relation to what they launched there with COVID, can you imagine with Biden in office how that would have looked? Look how it looked in 2021. He forced mandates. Trump just brought up that he wants to take the 8,000 people in the military who refused the COVID vaccine and reinstate them with back pay. Now, this is what we're talking about. This is what would be important. So the insane things that happened in relation to the schools and all the mandates and all the stuff that came up in relation to this, that really is what we're talking about. And that came completely out of the Biden-Harris administration. So let's get it straight, you know, and let's have an honest conversation about it. And it's nice, you know, if you are just criticizing the political process to just go after this candidate or whatever, but you have to be precise. That's why I object to the whole wing of things. And, you know, I've hung it on Whitney Webb, but it's a lot of people. It's like over a dozen. And, but I noticed that in particular, in relation to this piece about Kennedy throwing his endorsement to Trump, that she was leading this huge charge against it. And what I want to tell her, because, you know, I know her and I want her to get things right. I don't want her to be the target of criticism and things, is that, you know, what would you have? I mean, do you want to wake up November 5th and have Kamala Harris and Waltz in the presidency and vice presidency? Is that what you're aiming for? Or the other thing is that there's a lot of things going on in this process where they say, well, it just doesn't matter. And just, you know, don't even think about it because either way, it's going to be bad. Well, look, I understand that the political process is certainly, you know, not something for a purist, but you're going to end up with somebody as president on January 20th, 2025. Who do you want it to be? You got two possibilities now. So, you know, yes, can you develop another party? Maybe Bobby has laid out the foundation for a third party. Thank God. And I think that we should get the corruption out of the politics and the Democrats. But the Democrats hold over this process on the media side, on the censorship side. They're moving the country into such a Marxist place that we won't recognize the country in a very short period of time if Harris gets in. So in my opinion, this is a chance to reclaim Camelot and Bobby coming across the barrier of Democrat to Republican, independent, and working with President Trump is an absolute political earthquake. And he put it very well, which is that the media has not done their jobs. They have not held these people to account. They have become an arm of the State Department. And in the process, we've lost 750,000 of Ukrainians' youth to a war that didn't need to be fought because there was no peace process in place and we wanted it and we instigated it. And so finally, you know, from that instigation, we got this war in Ukraine, and it's a proxy war on behalf of the U.S. So there's a lot of corruption involved there. And so you need, what you need now is a group to go in that's not into the global, you know, this whole global war machine, and that, you know, Trump during his presidency was not involved in any wars. And that's very important to consider as well. And Bobby Kennedy with his transparency, those factors can make a huge difference to America and to the world. And that's where we should be aiming our force and our inclination and our examination of the world stage. Because if you don't stop the thing that's coming in, you are going to end up in that technocratic hellhole that so many of these people and researchers talk about. And they're right. Don't get me wrong. They are right. But the thing is, you need to find people who are vested on the political side in the Constitution. And that's crucial. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is Recapturing Camelot, JFK's New Frontier versus the Deep State. And I want to say also that there's a lot of voices on the independent side that I consider kind of immature. And I think it's important that some of the larger voices that have been out there, like Professor Peter Dale Scott, you know, who's given us six decades of research around the deep state. These are the things that I draw more from and that I bring forward in relation to this. And the deeper ideas, the more open, you know, large scale geopolitical thing. People who are picking out certain people or certain things that they don't like, and then, you know, just trying to make political hay with that. I think it's a very immature thing that's going on in the space. And I think it leads to an immaturity, but I also think it represents a kind of invasion of what independent media is, should be good at, which is, it shouldn't be subject to, the kind of pessimism that is just going to draw everything down. Well, everything's so bad, you know. I mean, where are the solutions in relation to this? That's the question really to be asking. And if you can just, you know, if you're going to just judge a political candidate based on one issue, you know, oh, so-and-so doesn't have my position on Gaza, I'm out, you know, you're going to miss the larger picture, because how did you get into a situation like that in the first place? So you're going to have to consider a lot of factors. And also, do you think if, for example, Trump doesn't have your position on Gaza, do you think the Harris Waltz administration is going to? Do you think they're going to protect your rights? Or are they going to give the medical establishment the ability to have your 10-year-old sign a form and have their gender change without the parents' permission? You got to get real about who these people are. There's a huge difference. And, you know, so anyone who says that there isn't is lying, or they're uninformed, because there's a huge difference between what's going on with this ticket versus the insanity of the Harris-Waltz ticket. And we all need to get together collectively. I saw Brett Weinstein said something very important. He said, we all have to get together, and it's a paraphrase, but basically completely defeat this demonic blob. And he said, we have to unite and get rid of the blue team. Everyone is aware of this. It's coming. It's emanating out of the DNC.
And he still considers himself a Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
But he says these people are not Democrats.
No
he
way.
He said it's a complete inversion of what Democrats were traditionally.
Yeah. And here's an interesting thing, too, because when you look at it, that Bobby Kennedy, you know, he was a lifelong Democrat. Why did he go independent? You know, whatever the neocons and the sick machine that's made a home, the extent of that evil, the Leviathan that's living inside the DNC. And it's inside the Never Trump camp on the Republican side also, the Liz Cheney side, the continuity of government side. You're going to have to see those things for real and not just have a kind of like an immature shoot from the hip. You know, I don't like this. I remember they were doing this with Bobby Kennedy because they had one quote from him from like 10 years ago about climate change. You know, the whole field needs to grow up a little bit, because what you need to do is study what is a person's policy? What are they going to do? Not some quip, not some tweet that, you know, gets around. Big deal. You know, where are they actually coming from? And so you have track record there on the side with Trump. Some of the things from his presidency could solve a lot of the situation now. His economy was absolutely great. One. Two, he took care of the border and tried to build a border wall and completed some of it. He installed three justices at the Supreme Court, and most of them have made pretty good decisions. So, you know, he has a track record there of things that have worked out, and he's been under a tremendous assault of this other thing. Why? You have to ask that question, why? And when you look into the knowledge base that Trump has between Roy Cohn and his uncle and others, he understands where a lot of those things are. It doesn't mean where he's going to make all the right decisions. And I don't think it should be, you know, you don't have to even put him on a pedestal. But in relation to the election, you can't deny that there's an ill thing going on in the DNC. And if they force this unelected person on us, they've already been walking around with a brain dead president. I mean, who actually is in charge of the country right now? Can you really answer that?
No one can.
This is fascinating to me because I've studied politics my whole life. There's never been a situation like this, ever. So now, technically, Biden is still running the show, but we know that, you know, mentally, he's out of it enough for them to remove him from running for an election that he actually won the nomination for. So we're in an unusual space here. We have about now just these 2 months between now and the election. That's where we can fix things. And then the period of the election and then the interim period where, say, if Trump and Vance and Bobby win this election, there's an interim period where it's president-elect, and that's a very dangerous period as well. So I do suspect that the same group, you know, they're in it for all the marbles. And so for me, the continuity of government group, I have to put that across because it's such a big moment for Trump and Bobby to get together. This is what we've been talking about. And since Bobby threw his hat in the ring in April of 2023, this is the moment that we've been waiting for. The campaign starts now. And, you know, throw this junk out the window about, you know, Trump and Bobby and all that stuff. Trump and Bobby can bring the country together. Make no mistake about it. And, you know, obviously analyze everything that's going on in relation to these campaigns, but don't for a minute buy into the thing of, oh, you know, here's all this resentment and criticism around Trump and Bobby, but tell you what, we're going to just leave with kids' gloves anything about the Democrats. Because for some weird reason, a lot of these writers on that side, and I've been straining myself to understand exactly what's going on here, because very often the writers are in other countries sending the writing into America. I don't like that either, because if you're not here on a certain level, you're not vested, and you have to take that into account also. So this needs to be understood that somebody looking from the outside isn't seeing just how weird things are getting in America, and also the impact of the incredible invasion of the border. So they're out of the loop, in my opinion. And unless you're here and, you know, your own future is at stake here in America, I honestly don't even think you should be saying anything about it, because the people who live here, they have to make the decisions. So if you're going to really be concerned about it, then get your butt to America and organize voter groups and get them to the polls and all the rest of it. Otherwise, you know, you're kind of you're acting as a disruptor in the political process. And that is the opposite of what we need. I think today represents a break with that kind of malaise that I've seen coming in these circles. And some of it, I think, is manipulated. Instead, I think we need a big push to throw this administration out and install something new. And in this case, we have Bobby and Trump working together. That says to me that they can achieve a very important moment of Camelot. And that's what we're talking about. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Recapturing Camelot, JFK's New Frontier versus the Deep State. We're going to be taking your questions here momentarily. I have a couple of things to put on the record to let us know the corruption around the Democrats isn't just in relation to Trump and Bobby, but to other people as well. And I'm going to get into some of those and then into your questions and also some new pieces around crooks and the assassination attempt. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Karen Carpenter says, is Trump's Make America Healthy unity with RFK Jr. a way of extending a hand to those who still have issues with his handling of warp speed and jab injuries? And I would add, without admitting that he screwed up at all.
I think that what's involved with the two of them working together comes, if you really listen to the phone call between them, there's a lot to read between the lines of that call between Trump and Bobby right after the assassination. And he's talking to him about setting up a commission to study vaccines. And that is, you know, you can see the two of them working together open up a lot of eyes. And that's the kind of advisor that Trump needs working with them. I think some of the other people around Trump this time around are better as well. I think we've got a better team in general around him. I would say that the danger here is that the real danger is the desperation in the deep state and the attempt at assassinating Trump by the deep state you know, and then blaming it on this lone nut, Crooks. There were multiple people involved in that shooting from my own analysis and others. And we need to really study that because it's an operation where we have multiple shooters. It's very much like the Kennedy assassination, but they wanted to have this scenario and lay it out that way. The actions of the Secret Service, which, by the way, they laid off five of the officers involved now, five of the agents involved in that. And of course, the director quit. Now, that doesn't mean that anyone has really taken a fall over there because they could have arranged this. Well, you know, this doesn't go down the way we want it. The people involved in setting up the Secret Service protection for President Trump, there was all kinds of weirdness, as we know, going into that. And the fact that they would leave the roof, you know, unguarded is just not possible. You know, the thing was 130 feet from Trump. You just don't do that. So that's a lie. So they're lying. The Secret Service, the official story is a lie. That's one. Two, they didn't provide Secret Service protection to Bobby Kennedy until after the Trump assassination attempt. So that was, you know, I mean, that's a miscarriage of justice right there. And that is opening him up because he dared to take on the establishment. So there's a lot of things going on in the background that you don't see around the mainstream in relation to this. We have to understand that the thing that's interfacing with the Secret Service heavily right now is Homeland Security. And the thing, the interface between Homeland Security and the Continuity of Government group, since they both got, you know, Homeland Security got born out of the 9/11 false flag, and the Continuity of Government got an incredible boost because it was activated and maintains the September 11th emergency powers, which every president signs into law with the National Defense Authorization Act. So a lot of unconstitutional things like warrantless wiretapping and all sorts of nonsense are still included. We still haven't gotten around it as a result of that. I'm going to read you a couple of quotes from some people who've studied the structure of the assassinations and how it impacts kind of regular political running of a country. And it's very important. We need to understand assassinations on a much deeper level because they've been utilized for centuries in relation to the control of countries. And we're in one of these assassination seasons, as we did an episode last month about. The first one is from Mark Lane, who was a researcher of the JFK assassination, who brought forward the Rush to Judgment book and movie. And it's interesting because when you see the Secret Service director replacement who came on board after she left, it was very interesting because he kept using this term, rush to judgment, rush to judgment. There shouldn't be a rush to judgment and all this stuff, which was Mark Lane's classic line. This is the weirdness. Mm-hmm. So here's what he asks in his book. Why did the CIA see John Kennedy as their enemy? And he says, in the death of President Kennedy, no measures were employed since the prosecutors and their legion of FBI, CIA, and local police agents declined to look for the assassins and actively sought to obscure the facts, very much like what's happening with the Crook situation. There was therefore no one to question, with the exception of Lee Oswald, who had been murdered at the Dallas police, in the custody of the Dallas police and courts building by a friend of the local police, a man who had worked for Hoover's FBI in Dallas, Jack Ruby. Absent a confession, and with such information destroyed or distorted, we're reduced to using our minds to think about and evaluate the total circumstances and seek explanations here, as we do daily when called upon to making difficult decisions. First, the facts. President Kennedy was furious with the CIA's deliberately false reports to him about prospects of victory at the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba. He fired its director, Alan Dulles, and later told his brother, Bobby, that he planned to dissolve the CIA and create a new agency. We don't hear about this part often enough. We've heard about, oh, I'm going to destroy the CIA and smash it into 1,000 pieces, but he planned to create something else to replace it. Now, what Mark Lane says here is he planned to dissolve the CIA and create a new agency and place Bobby in charge of it. Think about Trump and Bobby now. Panic, fear, and outrage reverberated throughout the halls at Langley. September 63, Kennedy decided to end the war in Vietnam, and he began to withdraw troops, then called advisors. The CIA strongly opposed those efforts and privately said sardonically, it may be a dirty little war, but it's the only one we've got. Sounds like Ukraine. And he was exploring an amicable agreement with Cuba over the heated objections of the acts of sabotage by the CIA. Now, there's a couple of important things there which ring into this vision of a new Camelot coming in. It is very possible that President Trump, who after all created the Space Force, which was a totally new arm of the armed forces, and he put this in place. And basically, if you study it, really what it's about is pulling under, again, the executive wing, that umbrella of the UFO file back under executive power away from the intelligence agencies and the aerospace groups. Now, if he does the same thing with Bobby, when they've been saying, well, let's put him in charge of this, let's put him in charge of that. Well, if he does what President Kennedy originally intended, which is create a different agency and phases the CIA out, then you can see that no wonder they're talking about civil war, because the CIA has controlled the world with America as the facade, as the excuse, as it were. And if Trump, after his dealings with them, including the fact that they created all this false nonsense about Russia and all the rest in relation to him and how he was a puppet of Putin and all the rest, I can see that being a very, very desirable outcome for him. Now, check this part out. This is from Professor Peter Dale Scott. I'm going to read this quote. And you probably didn't know this about the Central Intelligence Agency, that, by the way, they can't be prosecuted for anything. Did you know that? Let's see how this plays out. The exemption of the CIA from the rule of law. This is from the first Deep State Revolt Against the White House by Peter Dale Scott. From other sources, we learn about the autonomy of the CIA. It was almost by accident that the public learned of a secret agreement in violation of a congressional statute, whereby the CIA was exempted from reporting crimes of which it was aware to the Justice Department. This agreement was so secret that for almost two decades, successive attorneys general were unaware of it. My understanding is that the agreement arose from a flap in Thailand, where a CIA officer who was about to report on a local drug trafficker was murdered by another from the Office of Policy Coordination. So OPC eventually was absorbed into the CIA, but there are two intelligence wings. OPC was like the wild, crazy side of the CIA, and the CIA was, you know, actually engaged in intelligence gathering. Well, according to Scott, the OPC swallowed, you know, this wild branch of the CIA swallowed up the regular branch. And in this case, the reason they got this immunity was because one of the OPC cowboys gunned down one of his own agents because he was witnessing the drug trafficking, was going to report it. Now, he was about to report on the local drug traffic and was murdered by another from OPC who was working with the drug runner. Although this agreement was temporarily ended under the Ford administration, a new secret memo of understanding under Reagan again lifted the obligation to report the criminal acts of CIA assets who were drug traffickers. I have argued elsewhere that these covert agreements have been significant factors in augmenting the flows of heroin and cocaine into this country. Now, think of that in terms of fentanyl. Think of that in terms of the collapse of the border and why the border's so wide open and why they flipped out when Trump said, I want to make sure that we have a wall in place. Well, we have to start to go deeper when it comes to these things. And we have to look on a level and understand what's in play when we're dealing with forces like Trump and Kennedy versus, say, Waltz and Harris, and Stepford Biden and the Obamas behind them and the Clintons. So you have these factions there. Remember, the Bushes are hooked with the Clintons and hate Trump. Now, he's a Republican. They're Republicans. What's the problem? So you know, these are the kind of questions that we need to answer, because there was even a rumor that W was going to speak at the Democratic convention for a while, up there with Beyonce, That's who never crazy. Showed up. So think about that. And why are the Cheneys and the Bushes committed to getting rid of Trump? They're all Republicans after all. So there's something going on here, which is not Republican Democrat. It has to do with factions who are aware of how the deep state operates. And in this case, Trump is a real outsider on that front. Now, yes, he's a billionaire insider in other ways, because he's been in that system for years. But once he assumed political power, the situation changed dramatically, did it not? And, you know, when you see corrupt, you know, the Democrats rolling out corrupt Bill Clinton up there, I mean, how many crimes could you actually try Bill Clinton for now that they're on this whole thing about, hey, we can prosecute former presidents for their crimes? Let's think about that. How long would that list be? I would love to see a lawyer sit down and make up that list. So they're operating in a lawless manner, flagrantly, in everyone's face. One of the things, you know, and I went off on it in this show here tonight, is this whole thing that I've been telling you about people who are trying to say that the presidency doesn't matter, don't pay attention to that presidential race. They're missing something very important, which is this force that's been operational will kind of achieve its greatest victory by putting in an unelected figure. The only other time they had an opportunity to do that was Ford. And Ford, of course, came out of the Warren Commission. He never got a vote, single vote for president. He was installed by Congress after they not only removed, remember, he was put in because the vice president, they had this weird bribery charge that they brought up out of the blue and grabbed him. They could have grabbed him at any time, but they decided to do that with Agnew. And so Nixon had to sign on to having Ford come in. But Ford had been one of the people who'd signed off on the Kennedy assassination. So the Kennedy assassination is the crux. And he assigned Nelson Rockefeller as his VP. And how many different assassination attempts happened to Ford? Six. That's a lot. Including Squeaky Fromm, right? I mean, you know, you're using some of the class A people here. So you're going to have to understand that when you look at the JFK arc of it, you're looking at the same faction moving over time and doing different things. And it's interesting because Professor Scott laid out how JFK and 9/11 had all these things in common. And they said, but they're separated by 40 years. How could you even have the same people involved? And he said, well, they're not the same people, but they're the same structures. That's that deep state emergency planning, COG planning aspect. We need to get our hands on what that's all about. And I think that Trump and Bobby getting together and saying, we're going to release the JFK records tonight, was an absolute earthquake. My God. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show, Recapturing Camelot, JFK New Frontier versus the Deep State. We're going to your questions in a moment here, but I think we're getting an idea that we're in very deep water, and that this election really kicked off tonight with a bang. I want to remind you that you should go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter, but it keeps us in touch, and it lets you know about the incredible shows that we have coming up for you. Of course, the X series comes back in September. We have great interviews coming up for you, the best, some of the greatest people, mind-blowing interviews for you, and documentaries as well. There's some incredible projects in the works right now as we speak, including all the information around Lloyd Berkner and Antarctica and his connection with the kind of undelivered speech with President Kennedy. There's so much going on there. Of course, the information we got from Dr. Farrell about Ripple. So there's a lot coming your way, and it's all there. Stand up and be counted. Make sure you're on that newsletter list so we can stay in touch beyond YouTube and everything else. The other thing I want to mention is there are events and things that will be coming up in relation to the documentaries as well. So you'll be the first to know in relation to that. And I have more to get into here, including, of course, Lou rising out of the swamp with James Clapper to sell his new book. How do you like that? Well, I put Lou together with the whole counterintelligence piece, and everyone said, oh, you're calling him CIA. Oh, it's worse than that. But there he is, and the special dedication of the book, Imminent, Inside the Pentagon's Hunt for UFOs, which is Lou's new book, which, trust me, I have a copy of right here. It's dedicated to our friend, James Clapper.
It's actually dedicated to him?
It's dedicated to him and John Podesta. Special thanks. Special thanks, everybody. So that's what we're talking about. These are the forces that are operational here. And remember that Clapper and John Brennan were part of the 51 intelligence officials who signed on to the whole thing that, oh, the Hunter laptop is Russian disinformation. And then later that was proven to be a hoax. So what happens to those 51 intelligence officials who lied to the public? Absolutely nothing. This is the nature of the problem that we're looking at. I want to say this, though. This entire book, the whole thing is managed by Christopher Mellon. And Christopher Mellon is a DOD billionaire who has been in charge of this. I told you he was called the mayor of Area 51 at one point. We got through a lot of different things about him controlling UFO whistleblowers. I've put that on the record. There's a false UFO threat that these guys have been putting out there that we've knocked down over and over again. And one of the things I want to say about Mellon is that when we got into our communications with the UFO whistleblower, David Grush, of course, last year, and a lot of this came out early this year. The thrust of my conversations with Grush, he was saying, I can't come on your show. I can't talk about these things because Christopher Mellon would be upset. So Mellon controlled what was going on there. And when I raised that, and I think they thought I was going to keep it behind the scenes if I was going to get these drips of inside intel from Grush, you know, do you think I'm as dumb as Richard Dolan in relation to that? I'm not going to hang out while the CIA gives me drips of intel. No thanks. But one of the things that happened was that Grush came forward and he said, oh, you know, I can't do this. So when I put that on the record, well, Grush says he can't talk because he's being controlled by this billionaire DOD official. Then Mellon himself flipped out. And but Mellon is the one who gets the last word here because he's got the back cover of Imminent, baby. He put it together. Here we go. This is Christopher Mellon, former Deputy Assistant Director of Defense for Intelligence, former Minority Staff Director at the Senate Intelligence Committee. There's a debate among historians regarding something called the Great Man. Oh, Lou is a great man. Theory of history. According to this perspective, history can largely be explained by the impact of courageous and inspired individuals who challenge the status quo, leading to irreversible changes that forever alter the course of human affairs. I leave it to the reader to assess for themselves whether Lou Elizondo is one of those people. As a minimum, I can say without fear of contradiction that Lou has played a central and indispensable role in forever changing the way humanity views the issues of UAP. Now, what's interesting is he put him into place. He's one of, you know, Elizondo is one of Mellon's puppets. He tried to put Grush into place as well, but the problem was Grush, in his attempts to do outreach, I think outside of the, you know, the web of Mellon's influence, got himself into trouble because he admitted to me that Mellon was controlling him. And that became a flap that Mellon had to come out himself and rather distastefully his son did to try to defend and spin off that. But it was very obvious what was going on there. Of course, John Warner, his cousin, who is the actual, you know, the son of the Mellon heiress, Catherine Mellon, and the son of Senator John Warner, MJ-12, you know, he knows what's going on with Chris and known him since they were kids. So, you know, they went after him and all this other stuff. By the way, I wanted to mention this to people who have asked me about Warner, but I have spoken to him recently and he's just been traveling a lot and he hasn't gone, you know, underground or he hasn't been run off by any intel spooks or anything like that. He's just taken a break and done some traveling. So he's going to be back. You'll probably see him back in all of this. But I think the crux of it is we had that intel from him about what they were up to and with the things we put on the record about the UFO threat. This is important because they've been putting out a lot about these 2 days before Lou's book came out, they had a phony flap of UFOs in California. And when you looked at these videos, I have pictures of some of it, but these were basically dressed up drones. These were not regular UFOs. And you bet Lockheed had something to do with that. Now, what's interesting is, and this has always been my problem around the CIA disclosure piece, which is that it gets away from people who are having actual sightings and legitimate things that are going on. There's a lot of that, but you never hear anything about it because it's under the shadow of people like Lou going on Joe Rogan. You know, it's always this thing, right? And Joe Rogan always gets caught up in, it's unfortunate because a guy like Rogan could get to the bottom of a lot of this, and he should. But instead, he gets CIA people on who are promoting a UFO threat idea because they have, you know, HarperCollins or whatever. Who even put this book out? I think it is HarperCollins. Can you tell me? Is William Morrow? That's who it is. But they're a division of HarperCollins, I believe. But, you know, that's how it works. And that's how these people plug into the network. You know, 60 Minutes doing it. So that's why I say people like that haven't done a real UFO show. You know, I would like them to, actually. A guy like Rogan could do a real UFO show, but he hasn't. He's had Intel people, and like Corbell and things like that. Those aren't real shows. They're not getting to the core of what the UFO file is, how it's used geopolitically. What they're trying to do is elevate it out of, you know, just the storytelling thing, which I can appreciate. But the naivete that goes into this, and you see it with a lot of different people coming out of that corporate superstructure, is that the UFO file comes from a very deep place, and you need that span of knowledge to understand it. You never go to counterintelligence agents to get the truth about the UFO file. It's one of the most ridiculous things. Why would you? So the TTSA and all that nonsense with Tom DeLonge, those were all honeycombed with CIA people. And, I've done those shows. I've put it on the record. But this is more CIA and more proof of, you know, DNI and all the rest controlling this. Now they're going on record with it and saying, yeah, that is my friend. So what? And there's stuff about Lou and FBI director, you know. So he's, you know, he's in that system. He's come out of that counterintelligence management system, and they've put him out there. And one of the things I put on the record about him, which was information that was from John Warner's friend in ONI, was that his basic thing was interrogation. So he was known as like a really heavy duty thing. And he refers to himself as a torture czar in there. So, you know, I mean, I guess the Dark Journalist Show gets the last word on that. What's that?
Like proudly?
Yeah, well, he did all this, you know, to defend his country from those crazy terrorists. And look, I bet Elizondo is a good counterintelligence agent because he flim-flammed his way for 8 years through this whole thing. And he's still getting book deals and still getting put on Fox and 60 Minutes and stuff. But nonetheless, it's a CIA direct line. The important thing, and then if they didn't use Lou, they would have used somebody else. But the important thing is they need to present a UFO threat narrative and jam it through because they need it as an aspect to create a UFO defense office, which is what they tried to do with Arrow, but they need to do it on a scale about 50 times bigger than that. And for me, what they need is a UFO emergency. That's what they've been looking at, the UFO threat factor, as a way to activate emergency powers. That is one of the things in their bag of tricks. And I think that the kind of, you know, they have this thing for the atomic clock. It keeps moving closer and closer to the doomsday clock. And the scientists every year adjust it up or down as it goes. I think that we've moved, because of the political instability, much closer into a UFO threat scenario where they would activate emergency powers. And I've seen and studied emergency powers closely. And what they do is they give a group that can't get enough election power to govern, and it gives them the ability, you know, take like a Trudeau, who's actually intensely unpopular in Canada, or Stepford Biden in here, he was in the low 30s, right? Those people can't operate. They can't govern properly. But with emergency powers, they can do all kinds of stuff. And that's what the COVID op was really the dry run for. we've seen it in war situations before. We've seen the 9/11 situation gave them the ability to do that, to basically take over air travel with the TSA and grow Homeland Security into 260,000 employees. You know, that's a internal security force, 260,000 employees. I mean, that is a kind of, unconstitutional Gestapo. And we didn't have it before 2001. So we're only 23 years into this whole thing. So you have to think about the things that are changing there. And I think that we can get something totally different going on politically. And I think there's an interesting thing happening there with Trump also, because there's only one term left, because he can't have more than one term. So we could also be looking at Bobby as the heir to this unity government that takes place. And, I'm sure there'll be a lot of conversations about that over time, but there's going to be something else after the Trump administration that it's going to be a factor. And it's some kind of a mix of these parties, because Trump also has had major problems with the Republicans, as we know. And with that, Miss Olivia, your questions are up.
Okay. All right. You mentioned Ripple before.
Yeah.
So David Tormina said, DJ, if the Nixon time capsule contains secrets of the Ripple fusion technologies and Trump knows about it, might he be aligning himself with Musk to use it for a new SpaceX propulsion system?
Well, that's another thing, isn't it? That Musk came out heavily. And it's funny because they've been drawing Musk on the media side. They've really been going against him. And they've been saying, oh, Musk and Trump and all this kind of stuff. But let me tell you, you go back 9 months and Musk was pretty anti-Trump, in fact. And earlier than that, last year, he was trying to promote DeSantis. So, and before that, he was, acting pretty liberal. So, I think a lot of these people have seen in the case of Musk, he had actually take his company out of California because of the chaos there. To protect their assets. I mean, you think about this, really, as these people are looking at it, even people inside that system, they're looking at the craziness of the Democrats and saying, we need to get away from that. You can't ship all these drug addicts into a city and expect it to thrive. You can't expect to attract the right talent to go to work there. And so they've destroyed San Francisco, which is too bad because I lived there for a good long time and enjoyed it very much. California, the people are great. Remember this, some of the best people anywhere, but the government absolutely is one of the worst. And it was interesting because Shanahan, who I think had some good moments leading up.
I know, to this, shocking.
She did. She had some good moments leading up to this endorsement by Bobby of Trump. She said, she was thinking of running up governor for California because everything that's bad is emanating out of California. In terms of what's bad for America. And she's right, that the governments there have seemed to have been taken over and that they're warping all this bizarre stuff in there, including all of the thing about, taking away your right as a parent to know if your children has gender surgery and things of this nature. Absolutely insane. Funding of homes for legal aliens when, average people can't even put together a mortgage payment. I mean, it's insane. And they want it to be. It is that kind of theater in a sense, but nonetheless, people have to live under it. So I think it is interesting when you mentioned Musk there in the question to think about how they've spun that. Now, Nixon's time capsule, look, Robert Merritt, who came forward and gave me the story, he had a lot of behind the scenes cred, including the fact that the intelligence department of the NYPD, the guy in there told me that they had used him in UN stings. Okay. So he was a very high level informant. For him to come out at the end of his life and say, Nixon used me, as a messenger to carry this and that back and forth, and at a certain point, he read him this letter, which was basically a UFO disclosure letter that contained an energy formula, and then hid it in a time capsule in the White House. That's the story, as it were. The idea that Ripple is connected with it, I think, is fascinating. One of the things that I found out after I was talking with Joseph, about Ripple was that Knuckles, who was the scientist who invented it, I think at the age of 24, under just before the Kennedy administration came in, and the Kennedy administration, of course, tried it. And I recommend you check out that episode about Lloyd Berkner that we just put out. One of the important things about Knuckles is that later he's a key man developing Star Wars SDI, shooting lasers to get rid of missiles that would be incoming. And now Trump is talking about having Star Wars cover America, so it's again invulnerable to missile attack. But that also suggests a kind of UFO defense strategy and the extreme amount of money that would go into it. And what he's saying is, well, you know, Reagan wasn't able to pull it off fully. He couldn't create SDI and Star Wars because we didn't have the technology, but now we do. So let's put SDI Star Wars in place, baby. This is getting, you're getting close to that. You're right up to the edge of the UFO file conversation. It's right there. So, but in terms of Ripple, absolutely, it could be a factor. Yes, what do you got?
Nutterbutter says, DJ, can you comment on the existence of the PFIAB and its relationship with the deep state? I guess it's the President's Intelligence Advisory Board.
Oh, that is very interesting. I guess before I forget, I should mention, and because of all the things that have been going on, I didn't even get to mention this to Miss Olivia. I saw what looked like a genuine UFO yesterday, and I took a picture of it, and I'm going to show it. I don't make any big claims about it, but you guys are going to be the first to see it. This is the picture I took, and I'll tell you, the only thing that struck me as odd about it is I couldn't explain what it was doing because it wasn't going away. So it wasn't a plane that was flying away. It was hanging out there, and I said, is that a plane that's going to land or something? It was very strange, and it seemed kind of low. That is the shot right outside, so like down Harvard Square towards Porter Square. There it is. here's your
And it was
shot.
Sort of hovering?
It didn't seem, it wasn't moving like moving away like a plane. And it looked like it was in movement, but it was sort of going back and forth a little bit, like it was going to land. And I was like, what is that? I took pictures, a couple pictures of it. I've been checking them out. I try to keep an eye on it. After a while, I lost track of it, but unusually enough. Okay. So you had the California UFOs and now you've got the Cambridge ones. There you go. You have a number of, secret organizations that advise the presidency. And it's very interesting because, I recently was reading about a decision during Watergate that the Joint Chiefs made once they realized that Nixon's tapes had been subpoenaed. They went back and destroyed all their interagency notes, all their meetings, starting in 1947 all the way to 1974. They shredded them all. So there's very little left on the official record of anything on that internal basis that we would ever get our hands on and be able to see. So what you can do occasionally is find someone who was privy to these conversations, who at the end of their life comes out and talks about it. One of these people, very interestingly, about 2 years ago, I mentioned that I thought there was the presence of somebody around the UAP thing that I couldn't figure out. And she was somebody who had advised George W. Bush on foreign policy matters. Her name was Pippa Malmgren. And I'm sure she's a very nice lady, and she had a distinguished career, but I wondered, what was this George Bush foreign policy person doing around the UFO thing? I never got an answer then. Recently, a scientist, retired scientist named Malmgren, came out and started tweeting. He had come through some great illness, and he decided he was going to kind of use Twitter as almost like a diary. And the guy's name is Heinrich Malmgren. And in the middle of some of these tweets, of course, it's well known that he had been in the capacity of an advisor during the Kennedy administration and also under LBJ, but he was around some very interesting people, for example, during the Cuban Missile Crisis and nuclear talks, different things of this nature. I don't know that he has a detailed book about his history out there. I haven't seen that, but the tweets were very interesting. And one of the things that he mentioned at a certain point was that the former mayor of Area 51 had, who was under the JFK administration, had given him all these briefings around the different situations in relation to space. And he mentions there, you know, and also off-world craft. So he got some kind of a UFO briefing informally in the middle of all that. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? Because Heinrich Malmgren is the father of Pippa Malmgren. And then here she is doing this thing about UAPs. And then the father got the briefing from Richard Bissell during the Kennedy administration, obviously before he was fired along with Dulles. So I found that very interesting. And I don't know where that Malmgren story will go. I believe he's 90 years old now. And but I think it is things of this nature that could shed more light on the fact. That's why I think people like Corso especially gave us a window. Corso said he was on a monthly basis briefing both Kennedy brothers on the UFO file, developments, and all the rest of it. And he put things on the record, for example, like the X-15, which was the fastest manned space plane that we had at the time, was significantly developed by Walter Dornberger, a paperclip Nazi, came over here for the purpose of chasing UFOs. Because in order to get real analysis, you needed to be up close and all the rest, and that this thing was designed for that. So Corso gave us incredible things on the record that I think are just sitting out there. That's the real UFO research, you know. Forget about Lou's book, throw it in the trash. You know, I looked at it because I wanted to see how the intelligence were spinning, and I wanted to see how he laid out the various things in his own background. And of course, over and over again, he does things like misspells agencies. And you'll find this, that with names and agencies, intelligence agents will do that often. And it's like a plausible deniability thing, or they like to mix up the record. That's why you'll find a lot of the records that Army Intel had on Oswald were called Harvey Lee, not Lee Harvey. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show, recapturing Camelot, JFK's New Frontier versus the Deep State, RFK Jr. and Trump, an amazing alliance that we've been witnessing, and it took place tonight right under our noses. We're taking your questions now, and Miss Olivia, you're up.
David Germain says, DJ, the skies were overcast in that picture. I've noticed on multiple occasions a strange and powerful pulsing pressure effect, especially when the sky is completely overcast. Mm. Also, David, do you think the ripple technology was used to take down the World Trade Centers? And if so, Trump's knowledge of it and calling out the Bushes over 9/11 is the ultimate motive for the deep state to take out Trump.
I think something... I think a very unusual, exotic technology was used in the case of 9/11. I think the work of people like Judy Wood proved it. But I also think that there wasn't good follow-up in relation to it. And I think there were things injected into the whole 9/11 discussion that if they were around now, it would play out completely differently. But there was acrimony, and then in that period of time, if there was enough acrimony around something, the players would just kind of retreat into the background. Whereas now, you know, they get a big Twitter presence or something of that nature. So I would like to see a whole entirely different approach going back and looking at the 9/11 situation. One of the things that I think is absolutely important is there's a seismic register that takes place when the planes hit. And, it looks basically like an earthquake hit. And there are a lot of unusual weather things. For example, there was a hurricane that was coming in offshore and it just stopped dead in its tracks. There's so many unusual things in relation to it that any real researcher looking at 9/11, forget the official story, that's bad enough. You know, the FBI guy goes walking by as the passport lands in front of him from the plane. I mean, come on. It's like, hey, look, it's the passport. This must be those terrorists. But I will say this, that what we have You know, somebody up there said Judy Wood is dead. This is interesting. I put this out on Twitter last year. Wait, where's the confirmation for Judy Wood's death or proof of life? I don't know what's going on in relation to Judy Wood. I've heard all kinds of rumors that she's dead, but I've never seen any obituaries or things of that nature. My guess is she's still alive. So I would like to see if anyone has proof of that. And then someone told me that about 2 years ago that she showed up on a, had an interview and was just, you know, kind of casually talking about things and just basically had taken her profile down to such a degree. And some people do that. I would like to know, I think it's easy enough in the era and the age that we're in. If you're in contact with Judy Wood and that you know she's alive, how about passing that information to me at admin@darkjournalist.com and I'll pass it on to everybody else. Unless there is some reason why she prefers to remain anonymous that way. It's very strange to me. But if you don't have proof that she's dead, I don't think that we could say that she's dead. I mean, she had a remarkable wave of research. We know her book was quite remarkable. And she had some very bad things happen to her, including her assistant dying under strange circumstances. And I think that that could scare you off of any of this stuff. And I wouldn't blame her a bit. But I don't think that there's any proof that I've seen that she's dead. I would like to know. And I think that her investigation of the idea of a directed energy weapon being involved is absolutely possible. And it's interesting to think of it in relation to Ripple, because how many generations has Ripple gone through since it was developed and tested in 1962? You know, we're looking over 50 years, 60 years later. I mean, it's probably transformed rather dramatically. Yes.
Golden Girl said that Judy Wood was interviewed on iHeartRadio last month.
Last month? Well, is that a repeat, though? There's a lot of people who told me that, and then I looked at it, and it was from 2021. So if you have it, send it to me. That's the only way we're going to settle it.
So Joseph Farrell says, Ripple at World Trade Center, possibly. I think that the World Trade Center towers were multiple modalities in use, sort of like Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, wow. I'm thinking of a remarkable book by a woman. The book was called Extreme Prejudice. I can't think of her name. She's a very interesting author. She worked for the CIA, and they told her that there was going to be a nuclear attack that summer, that they were aware of it, that planes were going to set off a nuclear attack, and that many of the intel people were leaving New York because this was going to happen. And I think that there are a lot of unusual moves, including the fact that Secretary Rumsfeld changed a lot of the rules about how you take down a plane, and that you need the Secretary of Defense's authorization to do it. And he instituted those just a couple of months before. The most comprehensive work I've seen around 9/11 is the work of Professor Scott, and including the fact of the designated culprits and the fact that he could apply the pattern of how they did this with Lee Harvey Oswald and then apply that to the 9/11 hijackers was fascinating, because the idea is basically with the designated culprit, the agencies get told to stand down about going after this one person so that they can be in the right position and do the thing to get blamed for, so that, you know, the patsy can be well positioned to do it, even if they have nothing to do with it. And so I think the designated culprit is something that we need to introduce in a deeper way into this lexicon of how we look at things. Right now, the designated culprit is Thomas Crooks, but we know that the very strange thing about Crooks is that he was cremated 10 days after his assassination attempt. You know, too many questions there. And it was the FBI that authorized that. That's very suspicious, since they also power washed the roof and the windows where the crime, the shooting supposedly took place from. You know, you're going to need a large scale investigation to find out what was going on with Crooks. You're going to find multiple people involved and people who are made to appear like Crooks. And I think one of the most significant pieces of all this is a character that they keep referring to in these law enforcement recordings as Flatface. And Flatface is just kind of dressed like Crooks with the hair and the t-shirt, but he runs off into the woods. And Crooks, whoever they have up there on the roof, he's the guy that gets taken out. But the other guy creates this diversion. And then there's another law enforcement radio recording that has this Crooks lookalike walking towards the gas convenience store on the other side. So you've got three individuals at least operating with the same look, the t-shirt, the long hair, and this unusual facial setup. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show, Recapturing Camelot, JFK New Frontier versus the Deep State. We saw RFK Jr. and Trump today embrace and become a power duo against the Deep State and talk openly about opening up the JFK assassination records, and also Trump talking about getting to the bottom of his own assassination attempt. You know, they set off fireworks literally there when they were giving the speech, but the fireworks, in my opinion, were happening in the Deep State when they heard those two. Just imagine Trump and Bobby Kennedy together there in that incredible auditorium with that huge crowd talking about opening up the JFK records, which is certainly one of the biggest secrets pivotal to everything that the Deep State has been able to accomplish. I can only imagine that the waves that went through that, completely wiping out the kind of nasty overhang from the DNC and those used up, you know, politicians like Pelosi and Clinton, who really don't have any, had no inspiration to them. And when they rolled out Kamala, look, I want to say this just to somebody, you know, who's observed the political process for a long time. Kamala has none of the charisma or magic or of even like an Obama or somebody like that. You know, I mean, the Democrats have had some charismatic, good politicians over the years. Clinton, you know, Clinton's all used up now. He can't even speak practically. But when he first came into office, he was much smoother politician than, say, his wife. And Obama certainly fooled a lot of people because he was he had that kind of charisma, and he really had a great control of his vocabulary and things. But the fact is that those people putting forward, doing all this hubbub to put Harris out there, it's like, you know, Harris doesn't have any charisma. She's not very smart. The only thing that they really have is that she was installed in this illegal process, and she doesn't have any votes behind her. I mean, it's kind of a loser, and Waltz is a loser. Oh. So if they have, you know, if they force them down our throat, as it were, it's a weird situation, because these aren't the best that they have to offer. They're kind of like the freaky outcasts they have. But if these people were willing to put a dementia patient like Joe Biden on us for 3.5 years, and now he's technically still the president, although they don't allow him to run, you know, it's a weird thing, isn't it? The Democrats want something that is not even fully realized as a human being to run the country. So that lets us know, I think, where they're coming from. But I think Bobby Kennedy made a fantastic point in his speech today, saying that this woman now, who got nominated and everything else, hasn't given a press conference or any interviews or anything in 35 days. That's weird too. You know, so there are all these weird precedents that don't happen in other situations. So why wouldn't they allow her to speak? You know, I understand with Biden, well, they'd hide him behind because he couldn't put two words together. But, you know, Kamala, as ridiculous as she talks, you know, she should be going through this whole heavy-duty schedule of interviews, and she won't even go on favorable networks like MSNBC. I find that very strange. And the only interview that she's had is with her VP, Tim Walz, King Weirdo himself. So I don't know. This is pretty interesting. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Leshot says, what about Michelle Obama's statement that her father didn't trust people who took more money than they needed? I think it was her mother. But, you know,
right.
How many houses
Look,
do you need?
Let me tell
how
you something.
How many millions of dollars do you need?
What you know around here when you live in Boston is that Martha's Vineyard is where the absolute richest people go. And
actually, Nantucket is a little bit higher.
I would put it at Martha's Vineyard. But, you know, so, and the Obama's like just sinking $20 million bucks into that. And that's on the coast, by the way. If they were so hardcore in climate change.
Waterfront, real estate.
I don't know. There's no explanation for these people. But I don't think that they believe the things that they talk about. They just know them as good tools to control the population. Oh my God, the environment. You know, what they're trying to do with women is interesting because they're hoping to swing the women's vote very heavily. But in fact, Trump, he has no huge vested conservative interest in abortion. He does not even, you know, this is a guy who's a New York businessman who adopted a kind of a light version of the Republican platform on that. So this is not, you know, trying to use Trump and say, aha, you know, he's trying to ban abortion. He never said anything like that. He said, in fact, he wouldn't, and he wouldn't ban abortion pills and all that stuff. So what are you talking about? And then they repeat all these weird lies about Trump because they don't have anything real to go after him. I mean, it's strange, isn't it? You know, they're saying, oh, he said Charlottesville people were good for, you know, for being racist or whatever, you know, when there was the huge Charlottesville thing, which is absurd anyway. But all of the major, even Snopes, you know, all those different things, they were like, oh no, he didn't say that, you know? So they just like repeating it because I guess it sounds good to them and it's a thing to go after. And then I think the Project 2025 thing, which is like a big conservative platform and all the rest of it, I think that's the deep state putting it out and trying to attach it to Trump. You know, if you look at Trump, he actually doesn't play very heavy on the Republican conservative family values side. So that's a loser, I think, for them. They're just trying to brainwash the public with that. If I were Trump, I would have more, you know, like Tulsi Gabbard is another Democrat crossover. I would feature her more as the campaign goes. And, really do that crossover with women so that Democrat, women who have voted Democrat in the past and independent can understand what the real record is, you know, and that they're just being manipulated on that because that's absurd. Yes.
Don Neuway, former Israeli space security chief, says extraterrestrials exist and Trump yes. knows about it. But do they finance the deep state? Where do they fit in?
Well, no, he said it. And a lot of people try to cover up for it afterwards and say like, oh, he just heard some crazy thing. Chaim Eshet. And he was basically like what would be the leader of NASA for America. But he was the leader of the Israeli space program for 3 decades. So this guy was no lightweight. And he said something which has come out a few different times from different people. And it goes something like this, that Trump was interested in UFO disclosure, but that he was communicated with, that this group, this off-world group that's flying around, had literally communicated with him and said, no, humanity's not ready. Don't let it out. So Chaim Eshet put this out there. Whatever you think of it, his position is real. You know, he's not some Corey Good bozo. He's a real guy with real credentials who came through this whole process. And it is an interesting episode. There's no doubt about it. What's fascinating to me is that it happened right around the time of the Space Force development by Trump. So I think that tells us a great deal as well. Yes.
Wendy Eater, DJ, are you underestimating the mind control power of the mainstream media to sway many to support Kamala?
No. I think it's very dangerous. I was the one who, after the Trump assassination attempt, when people like Tucker Carlson was like, oh yeah, Trump's going to get in now for sure. There's no doubt about it. I was the one who said, no, it's not going to be a cakewalk. So I absolutely think they'll do anything that they can to keep Trump out, including, you know, stage an emergency, nuclear, UFO, or otherwise. And I think that that is part of the plan, the backup plan, if their phony messaging fails. They're trying to lay over Obama-style messaging on top of Kamala. It doesn't work. She doesn't have the charisma to carry it off. That's a fact. I mean, There was a lot of schmaltz involved with the, you know, hope and change thing with Obama, but there were a lot of factors that were working there. There was an economic collapse, you know, that was favoring the Democrats because Bush's economy had collapsed. And, you know, he had McCain against him. I mean, you could use all of these things. If you really track, an extraordinary thing happened with Obama's presidency, if you track it. When he got in, he won by 6 points against McCain. But then the margin against Romney, if you drill it down, was only a little more than 2 percentage points. So his lead had shrunk considerably. Everyone else who was a president who then ran the second time always got a larger portion of the vote. You know, Bush, who was tied with Gore and maybe even lost to him, won, you know, by 3 percentage points or so against Kerry. Clinton, who barely got in against Perot and Bush, he did much better against Dole the second time around. Everybody does better that second time around, or they get thrown out, but you never get in and then have a slimmer margin than when you got in. This is what happened with Obama. So the tide is already turning. People were starting to see through the mask pretty early on. And when he tried to pass the baton to Hillary, who was a terrible candidate, this has a feel of that as well, that they're trying to pass the Obama kind of magic onto Kamala. And you're not, it's not taking, like, there's not much to go on there except a media glow. But Kamala Harris doesn't have anything to recommend her as a president except the insane things that she's bringing up about price controls and things. You know, those are Marxist communist style. That's how they do things. And when they tried it briefly here, it collapsed the economy. I think it's 1970, somewhere in there, they tried wage and price controls. So these are weird things for her to bring up. And their economy is a disaster. As a matter of fact, a report came out showing that 818,000 jobs that they said were created, they revised them and got rid of them. They disappeared. So this year, instead of all this job creation, actually, if you take the 818,000 out, you have practically no jobs created. So an incredibly cool job market. Now, what they have is they have Powell at the Fed. And what he is saying is, I'm going to cut the Fed rate, which is going to, that will spark the stock market. Well, that's election interference. That's why they usually don't act in an election year. So one of the things that George Bush the first tried to do was get Alan Greenspan back in 1992 to cut the Fed rate in September of that year so that he would look better going into the election in the fall. And Greenspan said, I can't do that because it's election interference. Well, why isn't it election interference if Powell does it on behalf of Harris? So, you know, this has to be worked through. I don't know how he got away with that, but it's interesting because I remember, and I don't think anyone picked up on this, about a month and a half ago, Trump warned him not to do that. So I think one of the first things that Trump would do if he got in there is axe Powell. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show, whoo, going deep tonight here on Recapturing Camelot, JFK New Frontier, and the Deep State. We're taking your questions. We'll take a couple more, and then we'll wrap it up for tonight. Incredible political earthquake tonight with RFK Jr. and Donald Trump joining forces. This is the wave, the same wave that I felt when Bobby said he was running originally as a Democrat against Biden back in April of last year. And I felt like it had the ability to change things. And when the independent campaign had run its course, there was some thought that Bobby was going to stick around and it wouldn't be good for Trump in certain states, and that this Harris ticket would benefit dramatically from that and squeak out a winner and install this insane Harris waltz. A very dangerous administration it would be. But instead, Bobby did the right thing. And now it's quite possible that Trump and Bobby together may open up so much of this deep state control. And I think that that's something that's really important. I think people who study things on the independent side should really be excited about this as well. And I think a lot of that cynicism, I wonder if some of the cynicism that's being rolled in, I'm not accusing anybody or anything like that, but I wonder if it isn't being engineered in some way or influenced, because there's some thing in the independent side that's like, oh, it's already lost, you know, forget about it. No, Trump is actually up in the polls. And so the response to that on the other side that we've been seeing with these independent things saying, well, Trump, you know, he's connected with people, you know, or he has something that isn't acceptable as a president. And then you have them saying about Bobby, oh, you know, he has bad position on Gaza or the environment or whatever. Look, you got one chance to reverse this Harris-Waltz nightmare, okay? You've already had Stepford Biden for 3.5 years. He almost drove the country over a cliff. What do you want to do here? Come on. So, you know, Bobby and Trump together, you know, they have great qualities on the upside, and, you know, they have faults in their political background like everybody else. But you're not, look, there's not going to be anybody. There is nobody that would satisfy somebody on this level. You know, you could always write a book. You could always come out and say, well, this person was connected to some Bitcoin activist. You know, look, that's just the way it's going to go. Study them, understand who their relations are, keep an eye on it, you know, and realize it. But look, any presidential candidate is going to have a web of business interests. That's the way it goes. The question is, how corrupt is that individual? How have they subverted the Constitution? If they are working inside of the system and adhering to the Constitution, then you have a shot with them. And so you have to be careful, you know, being, again, making the perfect the enemy of the good. I'm going to repeat that over and over again because I see it nonstop. And I think that people buy into it. You know, they're like, oh, you know, Bobby said something about the climate 10 years ago. Doesn't matter. Who's going to save the country now? You know, you pretty much only have one shot. It's Bobby.
This is it.
Yeah, it's Bobby and Trump. And they have come together on this. That was a big deal because Bobby had spent a lot of time greasing the skids to create the groundwork for this independent party. So this is a big deal. But I think that after the assassination attempt, he knew that the assassination was supposed to be successful. And this changed Bobby and his attitude towards all this. So in fact, by trying to take Trump out now, there's a boomerang headed in the direction of the deep state Democrat Harris-Waltz freak show. And I think that that boomerang is Bobby joining forces with Trump. Miss Olivia, the last question of the night, you're up.
Well, I wasn't ready for the last question.
That's what will make it so perfect.
Let me just throw this one out. Mike Rotunda, question. Do you think Trump drops Vance for Bobby?
No. There's no dropping Vance. Vance was selected. Vance was inaugurated at the Republican National Convention. Vance has a best-selling book about how he came up from humble roots into this position. And he, you know, he has a very, he's a good kind of balance against Trump. I might have, there were other people that I thought would have been an interesting choice as vice president. But vice president in this case is not, I mean, I don't think that that's going to make all the difference. And so, no, you're not going to see any switches. What's weird is you might see a switch on the Waltz side, because I think that there are skeletons coming out of his closet about the way that he's used his exaggerated his military service. We've seen that in a wave come up already a couple of times. He's the person I would keep an eye on for getting switched out. I wanted to bring this up before we wrap up tonight, which is that Merrick Garland, and just think about the insidiousness of this with everything that's going on in the UK with them trying to control what people tweet or put on Facebook or something. And putting people in jail for saying, you know, we're being overrun by migrants. Oh, you go to jail for a year, you know. Merrick Garland, who has real big problems with the truth, and, you know, he enacted Biden's legalization of the weaponization of the legal department against his political opponents. This guy now is going after, quote, Americans with ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin's state TV networks are being investigated by U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland's Department of Justice. So anyone associated with like RT or something like that, now you can break into their house and, like, you know, make sure the communications aren't helping Russians against the Ukraine. this is how you get in the back door of the independent media. You start saying, aha, you're only saying that because you're a Russian agent. Remember the whole Russia, Russia, Russia thing with Trump? Now they just do it to the independent media to shut them up. Between that and the draconian rules in the UK and this nitwit Poindexter guy saying, oh, you know, I'll get international warrants for people in the US if they talk about the situation going on in the UK. No, you won't, Poindexter. It's not going to happen. But the Times, citing U.S. officials familiar with the situation, said the FBI is likely to conduct further searches soon and did not rule out criminal charges. The FBI earlier this month searched the homes of Scott Ritter, who we know, the former United Nations Special Commission Weapons Inspector. He went over to Russia. He was part of a talk over there. And they were saying Russian-born Dmitry Sims, a former advisor to Donald Trump's first presidential election campaign in 2016. Oh, they raided him. In January, blah, 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 let's see. He went over and he talked with about the friendship between the United States and Russia. Newsweek is trying to be like, you know, hey, Marlon's doing a good job. Keep an eye on those commies. Kremlin-linked groups are increasingly using actors to leverage its own influence to hire firms based in Russia to shape public opinion in the U.S., including with operations related to the U.S. election. The FMIC warned these firms have created influence platforms directly and discreetly engaged Americans and used improved tools of tailored content for U.S. audiences while hiding Russia's hand. Oh, Trump won? Guess what? It was a Russian plot, and we're going to put these people in prison because they were socially active, and the election needs to be thrown out. Is this what they're working on? We had that very moronic congressman who was like, oh, as soon as Trump wins, we're going to throw it out because, you know, it just so happens that he's not eligible. So the Supreme Court didn't act on it. We in Congress will. And that is, I think, Jamie Lee Raskin. Totally ridiculous and weird scenario there. He was like, oh, if you want civil war scenario, that's it. No, you have very little power, Congressman. You can't do anything like that. And there's no legal precedent for what you're talking about. So, you know, go back to your little wormhole because that's not going to work. Moscow continues to use a broad stable of influence actors and tactics and is working to better hide its hand, enhance its reach, and create content that resonates more with U.S. audiences. Oh my God, you know. So, you know, if somebody's doing a deep state investigation, these people, Merrick Garland and his little task force here, can say, I'm telling you, it was those Russians, baby. And so they're making up excuses for taking people out in key posts around independent media, around tweeting against the migrant problem and all the rest. This is to let the invasion hold. Don't let the invasion hold. Prevent America from being invaded by having the right leadership at the helm. And let's remember, the attempted assassination against Trump took place only 5 or 6 weeks ago. There still aren't any good answers about how the Secret Service allowed this to happen. Come on. And the patsy that they use now, they said, oh, he went there on a bike with a backpack. Well, now they have somebody else who had the bike in the backpack. And so they're like, well, it was this other bike in the backpack. So they're basically making this up as they go along. And now when some of the audio came back and it started to show more shots, they were like, oh, actually, you know, what happened was a law enforcement guy, a local cop, shot up at him, shot at Crooks, but he shot his rifle and it stopped him momentarily, although he kept shooting afterwards. Where'd they come up with that? We didn't hear that in the first month. You think that they would know that pretty early on. Later, then they changed him to a SWAT guy, then to a Secret Service person. So whatever they're doing with this story to morph it, to make it fit, lets you know that the corruption inside the Secret Service, that's where the Secret Service stand down took place, and that they expected Trump to be killed, and they wanted to blame Crooks, who it's not even clear that he was involved at all. And this is the nature of the problem. Who was this guy? You find yourself back in Oswald land 60 years earlier, and it's not a very comforting feeling. It's interesting. I'll show these before we go, and we'll take one last question, Miss Olivia. By the way, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Recapturing Camelot, a special report, JFK's New Frontier versus the Deep State. RFK Jr. embraces President Trump's vision for a future and endorses his presidency. And Trump talks about taking him on, and both of them agreed tonight to release the JFK records, which is an absolute political earthquake. I can't tell you what a gigantic deal that is. The two of them together doing that, watch out. So here's something to think about. I'll leave you with Jack Ruby tonight. Jack Ruby's portrayed by the Warren Commission as just some kind of lowlife who ran these strip clubs and all the rest of it. What we find out is that he's worked as a snitch for the FBI in the late 40s, and that Richard Nixon had him as an informant for drug gangs in Chicago in the late 40s. And so when the assassination happened, there's a story that Roger Stone tells where he says that Nixon told him, as soon as he saw Ruby, he said, "Oh, I know this guy. He was part of these behind-the-scene Senate informants, you know, and we'd have these meetings." Ruby had also been in Cuba and had visited high-level mafia figures in Cuba who had been in prison. And he also has a very interesting background that goes far beyond just running a nightclub. He was deep in with the Chicago Mafia. He was deep in with Carlos Marcello's New Orleans Mafia. But he was also deeply involved in Cuba gun running and deeply involved in drug running in Mexico and other places. So this is somebody who interfaced very deeply with the crime syndicate side of the deep state. Being given this easy perch to go in and shoot Oswald there, it's interesting. If you go back and you look at it, Fidel Castro gives a comment on this, and he says, "I know a lot about security, and there's no way that that situation happened the way that it would have had a secure group around Oswald, and you never would have had this happen." So this was created to happen in order to rub him out. And I have no doubt that what they were planning to do with Ruby, or what they had set him up to do, is they had said, "Don't worry, we'll get you off before all this happens." If you go back, you can track Ruby building up these nightclub acts and these different places, some of them country western, some of them others. And you can see how they just use these figures. Once the time comes up, they take the marginal figure and then they designate them for a particular type of job. In the case of Ruby, the kinds of control that they had on him, they said, "Look, if you bump off Oswald, you'll be a hero." There's lots and lots of detailed information from Garrison's investigation and others that show that Oswald and Ruby knew each other, and there were lots and lots of people who saw them together. So, you know, let's keep in mind that the history we've been told about these things has nothing to do with reality, which is why crooks and the things that they're telling us about him and the quick disposal of the body and cremation and things of this nature don't add up, because one of the things that a Senate committee could do is exhume the body and find out, oh, you know, it's very interesting when you shoot crooks, there's no splatter on the roof at all. There's just one little line of blood that goes down. And I would like to see a sniper expert explain that. That, you know, that doesn't seem very likely. The thing I'm going to leave you with tonight is the General Guillot, who is the NORTHCOM commander. I think that this guy, you're going to see, he's going to have some kind of a role in how they try to spin this election and emergency powers coming up here in the next few months. So I want you to get acquainted with him and understand that he's in charge of COG as the combatant commander of the United States in the event of an emergency. He takes over, and then he assigns regional governors for different, like the East Coast and the West Coast. The other thing that we want to know about him is, like his predecessor, he has a UFO fingerprint in his background. And the other thing that's important to understand about General Guillot is he's also in charge of NORTHCOM. So, for example, if they use something like a UFO threat to set off an emergency, he would be the key person to do it. They had a dry run for this in February of 2023 with his predecessor, Van Herk. And Van Herk was dealing with the Chinese balloons and all that kind of stuff. But then it was UFOs being shot down over Alaska and things of this nature. I think that that is all related to the weird resurgence that they're trying to do around this Elizondo UFO threat nonsense. And so I would watch out for that aspect in relation to the UFO threat being thrown in as a wild card here going into the fall to disrupt the election. And with that, Miss Olivia, you're up.
I didn't catch whether you mentioned this. Kat Goida says, Crooks was quietly cremated. We don't even know if it's him.
Yeah, I just did a section
okay,
on that.
All right.
Yeah,
yeah. All right, it's just
thank
so classic.
You. Thank you. That's true. She's absolutely right. Two things that are noteworthy to end on the COG note, and we'll do more on COG, of course. We've done many shows on him over the years, but I think it comes further and further into focus. One of the key things, and I've repeated this often on many shows, is to understand that COG personnel is involved in deep events. So when you get deep events like through our history, the Kennedy assassination, Watergate, Iran-Contra, 9/11, the crash of 2008, the COVID op, COG personnel pop up in the middle of them. And COG personnel in the Watergate encounter was John Dean, who had actually been their legal counsel. And some of the Watergate burglars were COG personnel. Winston Lawson, who's here with President Kennedy, is a Secret Service agent who was part of COG. And he used the White House communications doomsday network during the setup of the Dealey Plaza. In the heat of the action, he's using this emergency network. Nobody knows why he was using it. It wasn't typical protocol for them to use the doomsday network. You have to understand these people like Shalette and, you know, this whole thing around Cheney. We have to understand how this works and that the COG personnel tend now to run through Homeland Security into Secret Service. So, you know, this is how we need to kind of understand when we start to see this personnel, we need to know, oh, okay, they're coming out of the COG structure, which doesn't have any oversight and comes out of a, you know, a very unusual pedigree of basically working underground. Now, one of the things that's interesting about Cheadle, who, of course, resigned, is that she was Dick Cheney's Secret Service agent who dragged him into the COG bunker during 9/11. So you're seeing, again, in the heat of this now deep event on July 13th, the assassination of President Trump, the attempt, right in the middle of it, again, we have COG personnel. So we need to examine who is operating COG. We need to get congressional accountability for the continuity of government players and why we don't have real oversight or you know, the level of secrecy that they're on. So I think that that is going to open things up dramatically. And any investigation into the Secret Service or the assassination has to have the COG component or you're not getting the real story. And with that, Miss Olivia, we're going to wrap it up tonight.
Okay, this is the final question. So Joseph Tuga says, Trump vowed to release the JFK docs and start a commission on presidential assassinations. Someone's listening to you, DJ.
Tonight, he did that, yes.
And BKK says, is there a chance that this administration could destroy or hide some of the docs of the Kennedy's file?
Well, this is the weird thing. They could have always done that, and so therefore a lot of people have always said, oh, there's nothing in those records, forget it. I've put on the record that I think when Bobby Kennedy had this meeting at the farmhouse in Virginia, right after the assassination with the CIA director McCone, that he said he has a few weird comments about this meeting. And for me, what he was putting on the record there is that he was able to kind of booby trap them from being able to hide their involvement. So Therefore, if they were to destroy a particular record, it would set off all these alarm bells somewhere else. Therefore, their objective was, we'll just sit on it and we'll never let it out. And I think a lot of the government went along with that. At different times, they couldn't control the wave, like in the 70s and the 80s, and then in the 90s, it came on really big time. People wanted the truth about this. And so the records thing has come up over and over again. Of course, they were under the law, they were supposed to all be released in 2017. Here's the weird thing, and the whole thing is weird, but here's the really weird thing. The records that they're talking about that are mandated to come out don't include the records of George Joannides. George Joannides was discovered independently by a Washington Post reporter who quit, named Jefferson Morley, because they wouldn't run his story. And Morley made a really interesting point, which is that he tracked Joannides, and Joannides was not supposed to be known at all, but he was the one who had set up the entire Oswald psychological operations. And he was psychological warfare. He was their number one man. That's Joannides, and Oswald is the one that he set up. Now, Joannides was given the Lifetime Achievement Medal by Bobby Inman from the CIA. So they gave him this great award. What Morley found out about Joannides, what I think is so important, is that all of the records, when these things came up, the House Assassination Committees and all that, he was the guy who interfaced with all of them, and none of them knew that he was in charge of creating the Oswald psychological operation in the first place. So therefore, he used psychological manipulation on them to keep the real story from coming out. The records that we have that we need to get at and release through Trump and Bobby that they talked about today, those records don't even include Joannides' records because no one even knew that he existed. So Jefferson Morley and Professor Scott try to sue the CIA for those records. So the CIA, in addition to giving up the CIA records, need to give up the records of George Joannides. That's going to be a crucial thing. So if you're taking notes out there about what this commission would look like, that's what it would look like. And we'll end with this picture. And it is John Kennedy voting for himself with his grandfather, Honey Fitz, in his first congressional race in 1946.
I love how skinny he is.
And that's Kennedy coming back from almost dying in Japanese, when his Japanese destroyer dropped a bomb on his boat, split it in half. But he came back, and little did he know that he was going to come back and be a politician, because he hadn't planned on it at all. And it was going to be Joe Jr., but Joe Jr. blew up in a plane crash in an unusual war mission. And the father said, it's you. You're going to do it. Jack was going to be a journalist. Isn't that interesting? Wow. Well, it's interesting how fate works out. I'm glad that we got him in office. And of course, let's not forget the great sacrifice of Bobby's dad, who decided, I'm going to take back Camelot in 1968. But he walked into that trap, as it were. Interestingly enough, there's a lot of parallels with 1968 and 2024. One, LBJ, who was president, didn't end up being the candidate. In his case, he opted out, and now we know that Biden was forced out, but he also opted out. And also Bobby Kennedy ran for president, and this Bobby Kennedy Jr. ran for president. So the parallels are quite mysterious and unbelievable. And with that, Miss Olivia, we're going to wrap up for tonight.
Okay. All right. Let me line this up. I've got to thank Desk Hat Brock, Bo Krills, Ice Rain J, Empire of Light, Jessica Rodriguez, Rearrhythmia's Fun, Le Chat, Jordan Banner, C.A. Beverforden, The Bikini Truther, Terry Doherty, Wolfgang McCarthy, Jay Parsons, F. Lovey, Mac Hike 57, Rhinoceros, Robert Scott, Joseph Fabry, Jackson, Jake, Roosevelt Media News, Blues 38, and Short Order Cook 1. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Wow, fantastic. We appreciate your support. And to all our subscribers, we couldn't do it without you. And it makes all the difference to us. We'll be back with you next week, and there may be some, hang on one second, but there might be some special reports that come up in between. What do you got?
I just wanted to mention, you wanted to thank a very special subscriber who sent you a letter this week. I believe her name is Stephanie.
Yes. Well, I appreciate Stephanie's support and wanted everybody to pray for her to have a very healthy and happy year. But
it was a beautiful letter.
Yes, she sent me a wonderful letter, and that is Stephanie out there in Rome, New York.
You know,
thank
who
you very
are.
Much. And we really appreciate that, and what an inspiration you are as well. We will be back with you next week, and watch the earthquake and watch the reverberations and the aftershocks of that earthquake from Bobby supporting and throwing his support behind Trump. I'll do some shout outs here before I go. And let's see, we've got Jessica Rodriguez and Elsin Barrett, Brad Briggs. Awesome show, dude. Thank you, Brad. It's great to have you here. Don Newway. That was an information dense show. Quite interesting. Well, coming from you, that's great, because you've got great information, Don. Ivan Langley, Jordan Boehner. Night on a beautiful day. I like that. Nicely done. Joseph Tugas, Najat Madri, thank you. It's nice to have you here. Roosevelt Media, thanks for another great episode. Corey Anderson, Fubar Fighter. Wow, Caritas Tarot. Great crew out there tonight. Absolutely fantastic. Let's see. I'm going to go deeper still.
We had a huge crowd tonight.
Yes, fantastic. What a great, well, you know, I'll tell you, this was a big, you could feel it. I don't know. Some astrologer out there can tell us what was going on today, because when Bobby went out on that stage in Arizona, you could feel all the cosmic tumblers click into place. It was unbelievable. Nina says, Fubar Fighter. Joseph is out there. Joseph, we're going to talk soon, probably this week. Short Order Cook, Johann Wolf. If you take away the glasses, they look very similar. Oh, Jessica, I wonder who you're talking about. Missed it. Let's see. Red Owl, Gravity Cheeseburger. What a great name. Unbelievable. And of course, I didn't get around, but I was going to mention that you observed at some certain point that you were going to get jelly beans, but they were $9. The $9 jelly bean scandal.
$8.99.
Unbelievable. Roger Wilco, DJ for White House Press Secretary. Oh, wouldn't that be interesting? Maui Mixer. Whew. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Jack Nelson. Let's see. Nina says, Quantum Paradox. Someone mentioned Gigi out there. Yeah, we're going to have Gigi on soon, coming into the fall here. I can't wait. And boy, has she been doing some fantastic shows. Michael Hollingsworth, great show. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. It's great to have you out there. What a great crowd. Fantastic ideas, Rum, and the questions off the chart. Miss Olivia, congratulations. We will see you all next week. And the Camelot thing is actually very ideal tonight, but never let it be forgot. Once there was a Camelot, and there can be again, you know, sometimes you can overplay your hand in one era and somehow it comes back. The boomerang, the wave, the whole thing comes back and is in our hands again. Let's see what happens with this time. And I guess my main message tonight is not to give in to the cynicism that we see going around that, oh, these presidential elections don't matter. This one does, and defeating the Harris-Waltz psycho dangerous administration ticket is going to be absolutely crucial. And, you know, I wanted to mention this, which is that they're not just doing it to Bobby and others, but Jill Stein, the judge in the Wisconsin's top court, accuses liberal majority of acting as Democrats' lawyer in Green Party ballot access case. They'll take on anybody and take them on, you know, Bobby, Jill Stein, doesn't matter. They don't want anybody in competition with them. They want to rule the roost, and they have the courts packed in order to do it. And this is the danger. So these are the things that we need to uncover. So we're doing it together. And so thank you for being in the ideas room. We'll see you all next week.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
Two things. One, I think, you know, this is a marathon and we've all been through a lot and there is reason to rejoice this weekend and we should take the moment and really breathe and allow ourselves to feel excited and encouraged because we need it.
Yes.
For our mental health.
Yes, absolutely.
Our spiritual health, our physical health, all of it. And also, if you happen to be on X and you want to give Bobby some love, he's going to get a lot of crap over this.
Yes.
I think we need to kind of show that support. Him.
Yeah, absolutely. Get behind Bobby for his courageous actions to save the country. And we appreciate it here. And of course, I've always said Bobby would make a fantastic candidate. Look, he could do this incredible action with Trump and then be lined up to be the perfect candidate for 28. So those of us who thought about and were supporting the idea of a Bobby presidency, you might get it. Through this, you know, there's all kinds of things in the works there. So with that, never let it be forgot. Once there was a Camelot, and so it says end broadcast, but you know, it never really ends. That's it. Thank you. A couple of new ones out there. Happy Hermit. Your rhythm is fun. We'll see y'all next week and have a great weekend.
God bless.
Oh, look at that. It won't end. Hold on. It says end broadcast. Now it won't end.